Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Thanks for watching our show tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? I'm your host, Doris Hansen, and the subject and the practice of polygamy is the focus of this show. We're here to prove from the Bible that eternal glory comes only through Jesus Christ, and that polygamy has no power to do ever what Jesus Christ has already done. Jesus has already paid for your eternal glory, salvation, when he died on the cross for your sins 2,000 years ago. Now, you can either accept this or you can reject it, but you cannot work for it. This is a live television telephone call-in program. Our telephone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. And if you're afraid that you'll get in trouble for using your free agency to call into the show tonight, remember that you can use an alias or you can do an off-the-air question or comment. Either way, we would sure like to hear from you. Or if you would rather contact us by email, our email address is tv@aboutpolygamy.com, and we'd love to hear from you either way. You can watch all of our previous television programs on our website, whatloveisthis.tv. You can tell folks that perhaps haven't seen any of the shows yet that they can go there and watch all of our previous programs on streaming video. Also, remember that we do have a monthly discussion group in the Salt Lake area. We meet once a month. And if you have been or are in a polygamy group and you think this would be beneficial to you, please let us know and we'll be happy to give you the details. And we do offer the DVD, Lifting the Veil of Polygamy, absolutely free to anyone who asks us for it. If you have been or are in a polygamy group, we'll even give one to you if you're in the LDS Church. Just let us know how to get it to you, and we'll send it absolutely free. Or you can watch it online at livinghopeutah.org. Our website, describing the work that we do with and for those in polygamy groups, is shieldandrefuge.org. Our special message to you, if you are in a polygamy group and you're maybe being held against your will or perhaps being forced into doing something you don't want to do, you can call us toll free and we'll help you. Our number is 877-425-9993. Now, whether you're watching this live tonight or whether you're watching it on streaming video on the internet, we will help you if you call that number. If you're in a situation and you want to get out, we will help you out. Now, these folks that might want to keep you in the group, they might threaten you with hell and damnation. They might threaten you with loss of family or financial or intimidation of all sorts. They'll do maybe say many things to try and keep you in the group, to keep you from leaving. But we'll help you. Just let us know. Don't let their intimidations give you the fear to stay in. Your fear will go away once you get away. Just give us a call, 877-425-9993. Next week on the show, I'm going to be discussing myth number 12. And these are the myths that we've been talking about that the Mormons use to explain why early Mormons practiced polygamy. We're also going to discuss a particularly recent interesting Gallup poll that has come out. And if we have time, I want to discuss the United Order. Now, the United Order is something that almost every polygamy group that's come from Joseph Smith practice. In fact, it's a huge part of many polygamy groups. And so it's an important thing for us to be discussing. And if we don't get to it next week, we'll get to it in a future week. But at any rate, we're going to discuss that. And the following week on August 13, we're going to have two guests. And the three of us will be discussing the movie Joseph Smith, The Prophet of the Restoration. We're going to attempt to separate truth from fiction as depicted in that movie. In fact, on future shows, we are going to do some book reviews some video reviews and movie reviews as it relates to polygamy. So if you have any material that you think you would like to suggest that we could use, just email us the title and we'll be happy to take it into consideration. Our email address again is tv@aboutpolygamy.com. In his book, In Sacred Loneliness, Todd Compton writes about Joseph Smith's second plural wife, and he entitles that chapter, The Wife of Two Martyrs. His second plural wife's name was Lucinda Pendleton Morgan Harris Smith. Tonight we're going to dramatize Lucinda's experiences with Masonry and with Joseph Smith, much like we did the dramatization last April when we interviewed other of Joseph Smith's plural wives. I'd like to introduce our guest tonight who will be dramatizing our interview with Lucinda Pendleton as we learn more about Joseph Smith and his controversial plural marriages. I'd like to welcome Dorothy Catlin as Lucinda. Thank you for having the courage to tackle this project.
Well, thank you for engaging with me in the adventure. It's been a learning experience.
And I love your outfit. It's perfect for the occasion.
Thank you.
And may I say, folks, she made that bonnet. It's absolutely perfect. It's a beautiful, well done. I just want everybody to know that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, most of the material, like I said, for this interview is taken from Todd Compton's book, In Sacred Loneliness. We have gleaned information from other sources, and if anyone who's watching would like our bibliography, please email us, tv@aboutpolygamy.com, and we'll be happy to send you the sources that we used. You can also go to utlm.org to purchase the book, In Sacred Loneliness. You also can go there and find a lot of information about early Mormonism and early Mormon polygamous history. Now, Lucinda was the widow of Captain William Morgan, who belonged to the Masons, and then he became an anti-Mason. He was kidnapped and murdered just before he was able to print an exposé that he had prepared against Masonry. Morgan was kidnapped, he disappeared, and he was never seen alive again. Lucinda thus became a young widow with two young children. Now, early references in Nauvoo Temple records and personal journal entries place Lucinda as becoming a plural wife of Joseph Smith in 1838, which was 6 years before Joseph Smith was killed. Please keep in mind that we will make personal observations during and after the interview, and we invite you, our viewers, to call in and please make your own personal observations and comments and ask your questions. So, and also please remember this is a dramatization. So let's find out about Lucinda and Joseph. Now, we'll start with when you were 18 years old. And you got married for the first time. Tell us who you married, a little bit about yourself and about your husband.
Okay, well, I married William Morgan when he was 44 or 45. I was 18 at the time. I was born in 1801 in September of that year. There were other people in my family. I'm not quite sure where Lucinda fit in that family. Mm-hmm. But one source says that my father was not very pleased by the marriage because William was so much older than me and because he had a reputation for drink and a reputation as a man with a bad temper. So that's kind of the background that I remember. Pardon me, I'm losing my beautiful bonnet. Most people at the time knew his story, though. They knew that he had threatened to expose the secrets of Masonry, and for that he disappeared. And I was 25 at the time. I had been a very young bride, mm-hmm. but I was 25 at the time with two small children. And there was so much sensational publicity that surrounded his disappearance. Accounts were published in all the papers. I was questioned repeatedly, both by the public and the press, mm-hmm. regarding the facts, what I knew, what I had experienced. Mm-hmm. I was absolutely certain that he would not have left me under any circumstances without telling me what his intentions for any period of time. So I was strongly suspicious that he'd been a victim of foul play. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. But I'm getting ahead of the story.
Okay. So do you know, would you tell us when your husband and Henry Morgan's, William Morgan's involvement with Masonry began?
Mm-hmm. About 1825. That was the year he received a York Rite degree. He was initiated as a Royal Archmason at Leroy, New York, where we were living then.
Okay. Now, after being in Masonry for about a year, Morgan, together with two other men, planned to print an expose of Masonic ritual. Would you tell us the events that led up to this decision for them to expose Masonry and why it was such a dangerous project?
Mm-hmm. Well, William's reputation among Masons was always suspect. Like I said, he had a reputation as a heavy drinker and a man with a temper. About a year after his initiation, he had signed a petition for a new charter for a new lodge at Batavia. But some of the Masons there objected, saying he drank too much, he owed too many people money, and so a new petition was drawn up without his name on it. And that made him so angry that he determined to print an expose of all of their secret rituals.
Kind of like a vengeance, I'll get even with you
yes.
thing.
Yes, and he struck up a partnership with a man named Miller, who was a printer, and another man. And it was a very dangerous project, because when Masons are initiated, they take an oath on pain of death that says they will not reveal their secrets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're now the mother of two children, a girl and a boy.
Mm-hmm.
It's July of 1826, and news of this project of printing this expose leaks out. Mm-hmm. What happened?
Well, William had been continuing to attend Masonic meetings up until that time, but once the news got out, he began to be legally harassed. He was arrested, but the first time he managed to obtain bail and was released. He was able to finish his manuscript and send that off to the printer a couple of weeks later. And then he was arrested again. But that time, his friend Miller, the printer, bailed him out within a couple of days. Mm-hmm. But they were using the arrests to harass him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. maybe to intimidate him mm-hmm. to back off mm-hmm. with this. Well, after his arrest and his release from jail, you met another man who was going to play an important future role in your life. Of course, you didn't know that at the time. Tell us about this man, how you met him, and your relationship with him.
That was George Washington Harris, and he was a silversmith, some say even a jeweler. He lived in the apartment beneath ours in Batavia, and he was very friendly toward us. He, actually over the next year or so, he became a very close friend of the whole family, me and my children. And when there was a plot being hatched against my husband and Miller the printer, another man, a Mason, came to George and told him of the plot, and so George came and warned us, and after that, both my husband and Mr. Miller began to carry weapons as a precaution.
Wow.
So
was Mr. Harris a Mason?
He was. He was part of that Batavia Lodge along with my husband, but he was expelled just a few days before William disappeared, and he never again had anything to do with Masonry. Even later on in Nauvoo, when Mormons were rushing to join the Nauvoo Lodge, George did not.
Interesting. In September of 1826, another important event took place. You've got a very colorful life here, I want you to tell.
Very.
We haven't even started yet, have we?
Oh, no. Well, just after the book's proofs were produced, Miller's printing press was set on fire.
Oh.
Now, they were able to extinguish the fire before it destroyed the building, but it was kind of a wake-up call for all of us about how dangerous the project was going to prove to be.
I see. Now, I find that very interesting that the printing press that was going to expose Masonry was set on fire mm-hmm. before the expose could be printed, mm-hmm. and it was torched the same way that several years later the printing press that was going to expose Joseph Smith's polygamy was torched, mm-hmm. and Lucinda is here in both circumstances. Mm-hmm. I find that too coincidental mm-hmm. for comfort. Anyway, not long after this, your husband left your living quarters, and it was at sunset, mm-hmm. and he went to go to work, but something was different about mm-hmm. this particular night. Tell us about that.
Well, I remember it was a Sunday night, and it was about sunset. He left to go into the village where the printing was going to take place, actually was currently happening. And he expected to return home by morning. I expected him to return home in the morning, but as it turned out, that was the last time I saw him. He was arrested that night and charged with theft, but immediately released for lack of evidence. Then shortly after that, probably within hours, he was jailed for a puny debt that he owed a local innkeeper, $2.69. But they let him out the next day, and that's an interesting story itself, which we won't go into right now. But just as he was coming out into the street, a band of men came and seized him and hustled him into a carriage, and he was never seen publicly again.
Does that sound like a setup, doesn't it?
Oh,
it
was absolutely. A definite setup absolutely.
For him to be. So what was your reaction to that?
Oh, that was the most beginning of the most horrible week of my life. I was terrified. I didn't know where he was. He had left on a Sunday night. By Tuesday morning, when I hadn't heard from him, I contacted the sheriff, but very shortly it became apparent that he was part of the plot. Mm-hmm. He was part of the abduction. I thought I might ransom William by offering up the papers, the manuscript that he had been working on. So then there was a whole lot of discussion with the sheriff. Who should go with me? I couldn't do it there. I had to go do it up in Canandaigua. It had to be a Mason who went, and on and around. And I was just frantic to know where my husband was. The man who finally agreed to go was a virtual stranger to me, and I had to show him the papers before he would consent.
And then travel with him.
And then travel with him, this man I barely knew.
Yeah. So how old were you now? How many children and ages?
I was 25, and I had two small children. I had a two-year-old and a one-month-old baby.
Oh.
I had to take the baby with me, but I managed to find somebody to keep the two-year-old. But to pick up the story, once we were up in Canandaigua, that was by about noon on Wednesday, I rented rooms in a tavern, and the man who was with me, Mr. Ketchum, took the papers and went out, and so I was alone in this town where I'd never been before, and he was gone for hours. When he finally returned, he said the Masons didn't trust him, some of the papers were missing. He told me that William would not be killed, but they had to have all the papers before they would let him go. He gave me $2 to get home, and he offered me more money if I would get the papers that were missing back from the printer, and he promised me he'd try to find out where William was and let me see him. Well, then he left, and I came home. But I still had no idea where my husband was. I didn't know if he'd been hurt. I didn't know if he'd even been killed. I was terrified, you can only imagine.
Yeah.
And on the way home, an innkeeper along the way informed me, he was a Mason, of course, that I might not see my husband for a year. I might not ever see him again, but that I and my children would be taken care of. Well, I wanted no part of any help from the Masons at that point. I was terrified of them. By the time I arrived home, Mr. Harris, George, had heard that there were threats against the printer, and both he and Mr. Miller had locked themselves into their offices. So there I was. I had no friends or relatives in the county, no money, no property, no means of supporting myself and my two very young children, and my health was not good. As you can imagine, I'd had a baby a month before.
Just a month ago.
So you can imagine how horrible a week that was for me, and that really was only the beginning.
Oh, goodness sakes.
Now, later I heard that William had been taken secretly within a couple of days up to Fort Niagara to stand trial, a mock trial, before the Masons up there. And then he was weighted and thrown over the falls, or thrown into the river below the falls. There's some conjecture about what actually happened to him. Nobody really knows
for sure. Now, you had the manuscript in your possession. I don't know how they knew that that certain pages were missing. But you so to speak, could take the baton at that point and expose Masonry yourself and just go ahead and do what your husband was going to do. How did you use the manuscript, and tell us what happened with that?
Well, Miller went ahead and published it. He was able to finally get it published a couple of months later. The kidnappers were brought to trial, but that was a total farce. The courtroom was packed with Masons, and their sentences were very light, even though they pled guilty. There was a confession of kidnapping, but their sentences were very light. But the expose was printed a couple of months later. But one of the effects was that William's disappearance had made me tremendously famous because mm-hmm. of the newspapers were mm-hmm. so sensational. I became the sort of public face of anti-Masonry, and you know, the beautiful widow of the tragic martyr yeah. William Morgan.
Yeah.
So it was the beginning of a whole different life for me.
Uh huh. Okay, now we're going to touch on this later on, but right now I just want to put in at this point for the sake of our viewers, how this is going to connect with Joseph Smith. At that time, she mm-hmm. was having difficulty even having money to live on, mm-hmm. and there was a group of 10 people that got together and signed a document that they would make sure that Lucinda was going to be taken care of, and Joseph Smith's signature was one of the 10 on that manuscript. So now we know, you know where Joseph Smith is fitting in this timeline, even though they didn't officially meet for several more years yet.
And let me just add to that, geographically in that area, they really were only within, I don't know, anywhere between 20 and 40 miles, all these little towns. So it stands to reason that they would have had some.
So Palmyra was just a
Palmyra, Canandaigua, Batavia, they're within a reasonable travel distance, and mm-hmm. so it makes a lot of sense that they.
It's not
that,
unreasonable.
That Joseph
to believe.
Smith would certainly have been aware yeah. of yeah. of my plight.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it was in all the papers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't
oh, yes.
It wasn't a well-kept secret at all. Okay, now we're talking Mr. Harris. Mm-hmm. He comes into your, he's already come into your life, but now he becomes a different type of person, a very important mm-hmm. person in your mm-hmm. life. Let's talk about him.
Well, he was very supportive after William disappeared. You can only imagine. I lived upstairs with my two babies, and he was very friendly. He made sure that I got where I needed to go. He escorted me to a number of anti-Masonic events over the next year, and actually I began to do some speaking against Masonry and in support of anti-Masonic candidates, because there was this huge groundswell of the anti-Masonic political party began at that time, and there was a lot of political commotion, and so I spoke at a number of rallies.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those groups even helped to support me. Some people speculated that I was only playing the part of the grieving widow in order to sell copies of the book, but that's not true. The Masons had kidnapped and murdered my husband and had stood trial for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really did intend to make sure that Masonry was exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next year, we're still talking about George.
Yeah.
George even accompanied me to Lake Ontario to try and identify a decomposed body that had washed up there about a year after my
Whoa.
Husband had disappeared. And after examining the body, I was sure it was my husband, and George was too. And so we brought the body home, we had a funeral, and we buried him. And that brought some closure for me, but 2 weeks later, a Canadian woman came forward and convinced a coroner's jury that the body had been her drowned husband. And
That's
so
right.
she raised enough doubt in people's minds, and the coroner's jury thought her description was better than mine. They exhumed the body and reinterred it under her name.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing was such a horrible ordeal for me.
Yeah, that would be.
You just can't even imagine. And George had been such a wonderful friend to me through that time. I married him.
You married him.
I married him.
And how old?
Well, I was 29, and he was 50 at the time, so he was 21 years older than me, but I had two small children to raise.
Uh-huh.
I had to make a secure home for them. He had been very kind, and he had been a family friend for several years at
mm-hmm.
that point. Yes, I married him.
Okay.
And then shortly after that, we left to New York. I think maybe I was tired of being in the limelight. Perhaps the press got tired of me
yeah.
after I married and I was no longer the tragic widow.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, we left New York very mm-hmm. shortly after our marriage.
Okay. And then, not long after that, actually, you moved to Terre Haute,
mm-hmm.
Indiana.
We did.
And in August of 1834, another major event took place in your life. So, and it has to do with a Mormon preacher. So tell us about that.
It does. Orson Pratt came passing through and on a missionary journey, and we heard him preach, and we both were baptized into the Mormon Church. And after that, we kept moving west along with other Mormons, and a couple of years later, we found ourselves in Far West Missouri. And about that time, Joseph Smith arrived in the area with a counselor, supposedly to be looking over lands together. But there were some other matters to settle at the same time there in Far West. It seems that Oliver Cowdery had been circulating information regarding Joseph's relationship with a very young girl, Fanny Alger.
Mm-hmm.
And so Joseph's final discussion with Oliver Cowdery over it took place in our home there in Far West. Joseph seemed to trust my husband's discretion, and my relationship with him began to develop from that point on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, your husband had quite an involvement in the Missouri mm-hmm. Mormonism.
Mm-hmm.
He became quite an important person, and Joseph Smith used him in some mighty interesting ways.
He did. After that, George's land holdings and his prestige in the church both began to really grow. He became a high priest. He became a member of the Far West High Council. He was able to own land in two counties and in two different townships. Now, that was a privilege that only a few men in the church were able to have at that time. That same year, both George and I received a patriarchal blessing from Joseph's own father, which was significant in our lives.
Wow.
So when Joseph Smith announced that he was leaving Kirtland, Ohio for good and coming west, George was appointed one of only three people to go and meet him en route and make preparations and welcome him properly. And so he carried out those instructions to the letter, and Joseph and his family came to stay with us in our home.
And so they lived in your home?
They lived in our home.
Well, how long did that, how'd that work out? How long did they stay there?
For about 2 months, and then they moved into their own home.
Okay, well, 2 months is long enough. actually, an odd event, or secret event, I should say, occurred mm-hmm. most likely, most probably, during their stay in your home. Mm-hmm. Would you like to tell us about that?
Here's what I will tell you. It was most likely during that period of time that I married Joseph Smith as a plural wife. I was 36 and married to George Harris, mm-hmm. who was 57. And I continued to live with George as his wife.
Uh-huh.
But Joseph was only 32, and my other husbands were much older than me.
Okay. Now, I take it that you and your husband were rather close. Did he know? Was he aware of this relationship with Joseph?
Most historians believe that he was aware, and there is some conjecture that he might even have given his opinion or given his permission for Joseph and I to have the relationship we had. As I said before, Joseph trusted my husband's discretion,
mm-hmm.
and he was available to Joseph for many positions in the church.
How very odd! How very odd that so-called prophet of God would resort to this kind of behavior. Your husband grew to be more important now to Mormonism and to Joseph Smith mm-hmm. after this stay in your mm-hmm. home and probably the secret marriage. How did he develop in Mormonism?
Well, there are some interesting things that took place after that time. He may actually even have been a member of the Danite Society. Now, I can't say for certain. They were very secretive. But he did participate in at least one expedition, the raid on Gallatin, where Millport was burned. George was along on that expedition.
Mm.
In any case, he was prominent enough among Missouri Mormons to be indicted by the state of Missouri for treason, among other crimes.
Wow.
Hmm.
Oh. So he got to be pretty deep into the Mormon problems there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Mormons brewed up trouble again while you were there, and so they moved on to Illinois. And the historical record shows evidence of a close bond that was between the three of you, mm-hmm. you, your husband, mm-hmm. and with Joseph Smith.
Mm-hmm.
What evidence is there for that?
Well, after we lost our home in Missouri, the prophet specifically invited us in writing to live directly across the street from him in Nauvoo. And here, I still have the letter, so I'll read it to you. We were actually given the lot across the street from his family. He wrote, "I write to you to say that I've selected a town lot for you just across the street from my own, mm-hmm. and immediately beside yours, one for Mr. Cleveland. Well, our neighbors on the one side were Judge Cleveland and his wife, Sarah. And he was a Mason, and she, like me, was one of Joseph's plural wives.
Okay, how he's surrounding himself with interesting people, isn't he? I'd like to mention right now that we're taking telephone calls. If you want to call in, our number is 801-973-TV20. 801-973-8820 if you have questions or comments that you would like to make about this story that we're dealing with tonight, one of Joseph Smith's plural wives, Lucinda Pendleton Harris,
Morgan Harris Smith.
And she was a polyandrous wife. She and her husband, George Smith, were legally married, and she married Joseph Smith, who was also legally married. So we've got a little, more than a triangle going on that one. But anyway, we'd like to hear from you.
Well, and we were talking about how important George was to Joseph, and there are a couple of things I want to add at this point. There in Nauvoo, after we left Missouri and come to Nauvoo and built our home across the street from Joseph and his family, George became a member of the Nauvoo High Council. Later on, he held a number of offices. He served as president of the Nauvoo City Council, alderman of Nauvoo, acting associate justice, and did you know he actually had a room in the Nauvoo Temple?
He did.
He also was mentioned in a revelation that is in the Doctrine and Covenants as a member of a high council for the cornerstone of Zion.
Wow. Wow, so he was entrenched, wasn't he?
He was quite important.
Joseph really must have trusted him. A huge trust in both of you.
I think that's
for this to take place. And of course, I think that as we get further into this, the information from Masonry, I believe, probably had a lot to do with this as well. Now, your husband, I think I would say conveniently, was sent on a mission. what did this do for you and Joseph Smith's relationship?
Well, it was very convenient, of course. George was sent off toward the east to gather funds and information and materials for church publications. And he was away about 14 months. And we lived right across the street, so that was actually very convenient. Incidentally, that same year, I was baptized by proxy for my first husband, William Morgan, and he was one of the very first people to be baptized in that manner after Joseph's revelation concerning
it. Interesting is that, And you were only his second plural wife. They think Fanny Alger was, some don't consider her a wife, just an affair, but so this was just as Joseph Smith was beginning to get into this polygamous lifestyle.
Well, and he had not yet revealed the revelation regarding polygamy, but we had already established a relationship of long standing.
Right. Okay, later in 1842, Sarah Pratt, who happened to be a friend of yours, was approached by Joseph Smith to become one of his plural wives. And here she is married to Orson Pratt, and Joseph Smith wants to marry her like he has with you, just another one of his married plural wives. And Sarah was, she didn't put up with that for a minute. She was incensed with Joseph for doing this. And she, you're her buddy, you're her companion, and she came to you with her complaint. Would you explain that to us?
She did. Sarah had been my friend, and it was her husband Orson that had first proclaimed to us the message of Mormonism, but she had had several run-ins with Joseph over the subject of polygamy, and some very pointed ones. And let me read you what she said about me in this newspaper article. She granted this interview in 1886, I believe. And here's what she said in the interview. Mrs. Harris was a married lady, a very great friend of mine, and when Joseph made his dastardly attempt on me in 1842, I went to Mrs. Harris to unbosom my grief to her, which she did. To my utter astonishment, she said, laughing heartily, "How foolish you are! Why, I'm his mistress since 4 years." Now, why I would have used the word mistress, I'm not sure, but it is certainly true that Joseph Smith and I were engaged in a relationship for several years by that point.
And you know, when I read this, I suspect that when Lucinda used the word mistress rather than wife or plural wife, that she isn't taking polygamy seriously.
That's possible.
That she considered her relationship with him not as a wife, but as a mistress.
That's very possible.
Which is...
I'm not going to comment on it.
Well, okay then. Okay, well, after your marriage, after your husband returned from his mission, he still continued to enjoy VIP status with Joseph Smith and with the Mormon Church. But he inadvertently contributed to Joseph Smith's ultimate martyrdom. Talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, when the Nauvoo expositor publicly dared to state that Joseph Smith was a polygamist, George was president of the Nauvoo City Council. He was presiding over the meeting where they discussed what to do about it. He's the one who spoke out strongly that the press ought to be demolished. George is the one who signed the resolution that said, get rid of the press, remove the press.
Wow.
So Joseph Smith was mayor, and even though they had no legal authority to do so, they went ahead anyway, mm-hmm. and you know the rest of that story.
Right, and of course this is hitting right in our constitutional mm-hmm. pocket there, where we have the right for free press, and George Smith's involved in the mm-hmm. one many years ago on the
yes.
masonry
yes.
expose, and now he's involved in this
one. He's finding himself on the other side of the argument
uh-huh.
at this point.
And
mm-hmm.
it was because of that Joseph Smith is ultimately arrested. Interesting as that. Again, I'd like to invite our phone callers to call in and make your statements or comments or questions about our interview about polygamy tonight, 801-973-TV20. Lucinda, you were then widowed again. June 27th of 1844, when Joseph Smith was killed. Now, I use the term widowed very loosely here because you really weren't married to Joseph Smith.
Well, not legally.
Right. You didn't even consider it marriage if you called yourself his mistress, and we won't go any further than that.
If, in fact, I used that word. There's some question because it's Sarah Pratt who said it, and
yeah,
she was violently opposed to polygamy.
Right.
But I was overwhelmed with grief mm-hmm. when Joseph and his brothers were killed. When they brought the bodies back, I stood at the head with my face covered, weeping. Emma and the children were there also, but it was very public. It was no secret how I mourned him.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, there was a journalist, B.W. Richmond, who was a guest in the Mansion House at that time, and he had just called on me a few days earlier to inquire about my first husband, William Morgan, and his anti-masonry. And Mr. Richmond was there when the bodies were brought back, and he was there for the funeral, and he later wrote that my whole frame was convulsed with weeping mm-hmm. over the body of mm-hmm. Joseph Smith.
Didn't the account say that you were covered, though? So people,
yes.
not everyone would have
known. Not
who
everyone
you were.
Knew that it was me, although,
I wonder
of course,
Emma
those who were
you.
Close to the family. I think she probably did.
I think so. Okay, well, they lived with you for a couple of months.
And okay. since I was nowhere else apparent in the crowd,
yeah.
who else would that have been with her face covered?
You know, I get the sense as I read this, and we talked about this a little bit ago, that Joseph Smith and Lucinda had kind of a relationship, more than just sexual. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that was part of it. But they just had maybe a soulmate kind of relationship where Joseph could really talk to her, where maybe he couldn't talk to Emma and he couldn't talk to someone else, but he could talk to you. It just seems like I got that flavor as I was reading through these accounts.
I think that's possible, and there are sources out there that say his relationship with Emma was prickly at best after other women began to enter the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I think that's possible that he and I were able to converse at a level that he really didn't have that freedom with anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems that way. Okay, in January of 1846, your marriage triangle was commemorated. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Actually, as soon as the Nauvoo Temple was ready, in December of the year Joseph was killed, George and I received washings and anointings and endowment. And then about a month later, in January of 46, as you said, I was sealed to Joseph Smith, Jr., as his wife for time and all eternity. George himself stood proxy for Joseph in that ceremony, and it was officiated by Brigham Young, Mm-hmm. And then just a few moments later, I was sealed to George, but for time only.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, Orson Pratt witnessed that ceremony, signed the documents, and the clerk was J.D. Lee. Who was high in the church at that time. We're all very present and active.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, so historians generally agree that your husband, George Harris, was fully aware mm-hmm. of your involvement with Joseph Smith, and what we've been finding out so far, it sure points to that fact. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that that was the case, that he did know?
Oh, he knew. Now, whether he knew initially or learned sometime after the fact, after the relationship had been established, I'm not sure how important that is, but I am certain he understood the significance of that sealing in the temple mm-hmm. that day. He mm-hmm. gave me away
yeah.
for time and all eternity
yeah.
to Joseph Smith. George had been on the Nauvoo High Council when they'd read Joseph's revelation on polygamy, and at that time I had already been Joseph's plural wife for almost 6 years.
And he had, by the time Joseph Smith was killed, he had 34 plural wives.
Yes.
And George Smith surely would have been that path, possibly even involved with some of them.
But just one more little detail I want to add here, and that is that later on, after the Nauvoo Temple was destroyed, there was some concern that the record of that sealing between myself and Joseph Smith had been lost. You and I didn't talk about this before. And so President Snow actually said, in order that a record may exist, mm-hmm. he and his wife again stood proxy and performed the sealing for Joseph and myself in order to make sure that there was a record of mm-hmm. that sealing.
And so when people, Mormons or other people, get upset because we bring out these kinds mm-hmm. of stories about Joseph Smith, we find that they were record keepers.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
They wanted to make sure that these things, as much as they could, mm-hmm. as was possible, that they did get records and have them recorded.
And there are records of the marriages, the sealings, uh-huh. the endowment. Those are all recorded in church ordinance
uh-huh.
books.
Yeah.
And
So any doubters
mm-hmm. can go and look them up.
They all they mm-hmm. have to do is redo the research.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the last Mormon historical reference to you actually ends at this sealing, this mm-hmm. time that you did the sealing. Did you and George continue as husband and wife, and would you explain what happened?
Well, we did, but it seems like we were never really happy after that. George was no longer as powerful as he had been in the church after Joseph died,
mm-hmm.
and by 1850 we were living apart. Some people think that's because it was simply a marriage of convenience, not love.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think that I never really viewed George as a husband, but more as a father figure. In any case, in 20 years of marriage, we had no children together. And it does seem like I just simply left him.
And maybe that's what he offered Lucinda when she was a widow, that he would just offer that mm-hmm. protection and the convenience of having...
And that seems very likely to
yeah.
me. Eventually, I was informed by George's lawyer that he had filed for divorce and charged me with deserting him without reasonable cause, absenting myself for more than 3 years, and I did not contest it.
So you were divorced?
I left him, and he filed for divorce, and it went through.
Mm-hmm. Well, George didn't go west with Brigham Young.
No, he didn't.
And of course, that put him on Brigham Young's blacklist, but that was easy to get on. So tell us about the rest of George's life.
Well, when Brigham Young ordered all the members of the church in Ohio to come west to Salt Lake City, George simply ignored the order. And then shortly after that, he was excommunicated from the church, and he died later that same year.
Okay, so excommunicated because he didn't go west.
Well, one simply didn't ignore an order
from Brigham Young.
Now, there's some thinking out there that that says George was he was getting older. He thought that Jackson County, Missouri, would be redeemed first, sooner, and he didn't want to travel across the plains twice.
Okay.
I don't know that for certain.
Yeah.
That's been said.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, he simply did not come west. He ignored the order and was excommunicated.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Emma didn't go west either.
No, she didn't.
Brigham Young had plenty to say about
that. Nor did I. I was the only one of Joseph's plural wives not to come west, excepting Emma. But we don't normally refer to her as a plural wife. She's the first wife.
Legal wife. So after your divorce, your life is shrouded in a lot of mystery and silence. Would you tell us as much as history reveals about the rest of your life?
Well, about the time George died, I was living in Nashville, Tennessee. I had joined the Catholic Sisters of Charity and was working in a place called the Leah Asylum in Memphis, nursing soldiers about the time the Civil War broke out. That's what I was doing.
Wow.
And there seems to be no record of either the date or the place of my death. That is the end of the historical record.
So you go into history, shrouded in mystery there, huh? Interesting, you went from Mormonism to the Catholic nunnery.
One wonders about that.
It makes me wonder if she ever found the love, salvation in Jesus Christ, going into the nunnery like that, of course, or if she just went there to kind of shroud herself in secrecy, maybe living in some emotional pain or memories?
We have no way of knowing now. Of course, I'm speaking as myself now instead of Lucinda, but, given the time and her experiences as a, twice widowed, certainly once legally, but once utterly, devastatingly, emotionally widowed, and then this apparently cold marriage, I wonder if she just wasn't tired of it. Mm-hmm. And needed to do something redeeming with her life.
And it was a very tempestuous time in Mormonism, too. She probably really didn't get that much rest. We want to discuss, if we have the time, the connection between Masonry with William Morgan and Lucinda and George and Joseph and the Mormon temple ceremonies and the endowments that so closely almost copied the Masonic expose that William Morgan was going to bring about. But we do have a phone call, so let's take the phone call, and we're inviting our viewers to go ahead and call in. We've got time for you to call in, ask your questions, or make your comments. So Jody from Spanish Fork is calling. Hello, Jody.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
It's my understanding that Lucinda was married to Joseph Smith in the temple before he married Emma.
I believe that's true.
He took his endowments with two or three plural wives before he did with Emma.
I believe that's true. That was, we were sealed in the temple. I don't have the date right in front of me in the Nauvoo Temple, but it's that information is readily available. I think it was, I think it was about 1838. It was right after the temple was 42. It was right after the temple was fully functional. It was in January of 40. Hang on, it's here. 46, I think. Now, see, I've given you three different dates. Whenever the Nauvoo Temple became fully.
But he did get sealed to plural wives before he got sealed to Emma. That is a historical fact.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Is that your question?
I'm sorry, I can't come up with the date right on the top of my head, the year, but that's easily verifiable because Joseph and Lucinda were married, were sealed in the temple right in January, and that temple had only opened, become fully usable in, I think, December of 18.
If you would like to make a call.
Well, maybe she heard you anyway. Okay, I didn't know she had hung up. Okay, it was.
That's not true because I was sealed to Joseph in 46 in January. Correct this. Yes, after he had died. So at least with Lucinda, that sealing did not take place before Emma's because, I don't know.
I can find out.
Yeah, that would be a date worth looking
at. The wives and Sandra Tanner knows.
Yeah, and I didn't put those things in exact sequence in my research that I brought with me tonight. So
okay. Okay, well, I hope Jody got your question answered.
Have we confused you thoroughly?
We've got callers coming, calling in, but we don't have any ready yet to ask their questions. So we're still open for phone calls. Now let's talk in the information that you have been able to glean from this. The Masonry connection is just too coincidental. And the fact that Joseph Smith was on that list of 10 signatures to help take care of Lucinda right after she's widowed, and she has the manuscript that's going to expose Masonry. Joseph Smith has friends who are Masons. They opened Masonic lodges in Nauvoo, and it became the fastest growing lodge in America, I believe, at least at the time. And then the ceremonies are, tell me what you think about.
Well, Joseph apparently believed that he had the truer, purer form of Masonry, and there's some thought out there that he understood that there were genuinely ancient secrets embodied in the Masonic rituals, and that he, through revelation, had discerned what those secrets really were. Mm-hmm. So,
and he wanted to restore. In fact, he made the comment that he was going to restore true Masonry, just like he was going to restore the true gospel. Right. So he was had a restoration complex. Okay, line two, we have an anonymous caller. Hello, anonymous. You're on the air.
Hi, Doris.
Hi.
Just wanted to. I'd always wondered. It's a great topic tonight. I appreciate your addressing this. I'd always wondered if Lucinda had given this document that Captain Morgan had was going to expose to Joseph Smith. And the reason for that is, having studied both, it's interesting that what he was going to expose was the first 5 degrees of Freemasonry, otherwise called the Blue Lodge.
Yes.
And the information in that, as far as the penalty section, exactly follows the original LDS Temple Endowment.
You know, the book actually is still, you can still get a copy of it. You can actually get it from Utah Lighthouse Ministry. I just looked at the website today. And the original title of the book was fascinating. It's Illustrations of Masonry by One of the Fraternity Who Has Devoted 30 Years to the Subject. But it is available for purchase from Utah Lighthouse. So yeah, I would go there and look at what there's posted there on the website, and you can, there are actually other websites where you can read the material that's in the book yourself, but it's still readily available.
It's very
interesting. And one other quick point I'd like to point out is that a lot of people think of polygamy as unmarried people getting married to a man, and this is a great show because it shows that not only was polygamy happening with women who were married, and it's called Spiritual Wifery, but it persisted even into these valleys with Brigham Young, where someone of a higher priesthood authority could take the wife of another priesthood brother. And this becomes very confusing.
And they practice that in some of the polygamy groups today. The FLDS group with Warren Jeffs practice that quite a bit.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for your topic.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. Good night. Okay, we have Rick, line three of Sandy. Hello, Rick. Rick? Hello, Rick.
Yes. I believe you got my question.
What is your question?
How does a person know who is the true prophet, whether it's Joseph Smith or, say, Moses? How was he a true prophet? How do you come to believe that he was a true prophet?
How do we come to believe who was a true prophet?
Anyway.
Moses.
Moses?
Well, his
Moses?
Question was, how do you know if someone is a true prophet, which is a question I answered before.
Okay, well, we've opened
it. Regularly.
It's a regular question, and it's a good question. The Bible tells us that we can tell a true prophet by whether or not what he says comes to pass, and it needs to come to pass exactly, precisely, in the perfect timing that the prophecy is given, and if it doesn't, then he's a false prophet. And even God said in the Old Testament...
Required then, the Ten Commandments was given to Moses. We never really got to see the plagues of those, right?
Well, Moses threw them to the ground and smashed them to smithereens when he came down from Mount Sinai.
Right. So okay.
No, and then he went back. Then he went back up and got them, and he put them. He got the plates again, and that went into the Ark of the Covenant, and it was there for decades, dozens of years. Mm-hmm. maybe even 100 years or more in the Ark of the Covenant, and many, many people saw them.
Okay, many saw them, and so many know them to be true. Okay, what do you think about Joseph Smith being a prophet?
Joseph Smith had too many prophecies that did not come to pass at the timing that he said they would, and he also contradicted the already revealed will of God, so we have to conclude that he is not a true prophet.
Okay, that's a good answer. Okay, I'll go ahead and think about those things there.
Okay.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're welcome, Rick. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Good night. Well, we are getting to the end of the show.
Well, we are. And I would just add, you know, anyone can come along and claim to be a prophet.
That's right.
The question really is, does what he says come to pass?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the mark of God's word speaking through him.
And what I want to say here to this is, quickly, is God even said in Deuteronomy, if what he said comes to pass,
yes,
and he tells you to go worship other gods, ignore him. Don't be afraid of him. So, you know, even at that, because, you know, the devil can prophesy something,
right,
and then make it happen,
yes,
and make it look like it was from God. Okay, quickly, an off-the-air question. When Sarah Pratt rejected Joseph Smith's advances, what was Orson Pratt's reaction?
Oh, that's interesting. Let me answer that, because I just looked at that today. At first, Orson sided with his wife. And Joseph threatened to destroy both Orson Pratt's reputation and Sarah's if Orson did not come back in,
mm-hmm,
under and toe the line. And apparently, at one point, Orson was actually either excommunicated or in danger of excommunication. But then Sarah, I guess, moved away, distanced herself from him, and he came back to the fold. Back into the church.
And he was a big pro-polygamist at that point.
There are some very interesting things that Sarah wrote or are attributed to her regarding his relationships, Orson's relationships,
yeah,
with younger women.
Well, it's getting to the end of the show again. Thank you, Dorothy. I really appreciate this.
It's been an adventure.
It has been a good bit of information. I'd like to make a statement here on a remark that John Taylor made. He said, the one-wife system degenerates the human family and has always proved a curse to a people. Now, I doubt that there's very many people who would actually believe and agree with what John Taylor said. We know the Mormon people are monogamous, and there are so a lot of monogamous couples in and within polygamy groups. And so we couldn't, would we say that John Taylor was speaking the truth here? And if he was, are all monogamous, whether Mormon or otherwise, practicing a degenerate lifestyle? Of course, all the early Mormon leaders taught that polygamy, either practice polygamy or be damned. And so what does the word damned mean? Is that still in effect? Has damned just another word that they have redefined? Well, you know, we're grateful that we have a God who doesn't change, definitions, and who doesn't change the gospel or the salvation plan. The gospel has always been salvation is by grace alone, through faith alone, in Jesus Christ, our God and our Savior alone. The gospel tells us that God became flesh and he died on the cross for our sins. And we are bringing the gospel to you so that we are giving you the opportunity to follow either impossible plan of salvation by works, or you can pick God's salvation plan, which is by grace, and that's how you get your eternal glory, is by grace through faith. We want to thank you for watching the show tonight. Thank those who called and you who watched, and we hope you'd see you again next week on Polygamy, What Love Is This? Good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email at whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again. Mm-hmm.